Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, October 5th, 2014. This is episode 1124. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Citrix GoToAssist, the number one global market leader in remote support. Sign up for GoToAssist before October 10th to get another Citrix product free for 6 months. Visit GoToAssist.com and get started today. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at Gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet, digital photography, home theater, smartphones, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number to call. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, you can call using Skype. And that'll work, too. Just got back from London, Londinium, where I was... It was completely tax-deductible because I was testing, road testing, the new Moto X phone versus the iPhone 6, the road test edition. Carried both of them running on T-Mobile. One thing I learned, and I have to admit, you know, sometimes you've heard me recommend, oh, get T-Mobile because they have free texting from international. They have low cost, I think 20 cents a minute international calling. They have unlimited international data, edge speed, 2G speed, but still unlimited. And so that's a great deal. If you travel a lot, you put a T-Mobile SIM in your unlocked phone, and that's a great solution. In fact, worked nicely on the iPhone 6. I just took out this is a Verizon version of the iPhone 6. Just took out the little SIM. You know, they put that little chip in there that identifies the phone as your phone. Even now, Verizon even does that. And you pop that out, and you put in a T-Mobile chip, and worked nicely. The data is very slow. It's 2G data. It's not 4G or even 3G. It's 2G. You may remember that from a few years ago. But, hey, it's data. And you just have to stand on the street corner a little longer while the map loads. But it worked. On the other hand, and I was a little disappointed, I did the same thing with this new Moto X. This is the 2014 Moto X Motorola. I guess it's the last phone that Google, you know, Google owns Motorola, but they sold them off to the Chinese Lenovo company. And that's going to happen sometime, I don't know, next year maybe. But this is probably the last phone that Google will be. Maybe not. One of the last Google Motorola phones. And I really, you know, I've been a big fan of last year's Moto X. This addressed some of the issues that I had with last year's Moto X. A little bit bigger. I kind of like the 4.7-inch size. That's how big the iPhone 6 is. It just fits better in the hand. This one's a little squattier because it's 5.2 inches. But higher screen resolution, that was one problem I had with last year's Moto X. It was only 720p. The iPhone 6 at 4.7 inches is 755 lines, which is just weird. And but this is a 1080p, the new Moto X. Also, they fixed or improved the camera. It's a 13-megapixel camera. Still not as good as the iPhone. I have to say, every time I use the iPhone camera, even the older iPhones, but certainly the new iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, this is the creme de la creme. These cameras are amazing. I brought a good camera on the trip, but I think some of my best pictures really were just with the phone because I happen to have the phone with me. It just really does a beautiful job. And it's a nice, slim package. I'm not a big fan of iOS. I feel like it hasn't caught up yet still with Android. Battery life, though, was so much better. Now, this isn't a good test for battery life, I have to say, because you're on different networks. You're using data in a different way than you would at home. So it's probably not a good test. But I was never able to get through the day with a Moto X without a little extra charging, a little battery in my pocket. iPhone, not the big one, 6 Plus, which has amazing, even better battery life, but just even the little one. No problem getting through the day. Take a lot of pictures. One thing I didn't do was a lot of phone calls, because, you know, I don't know anybody in England. But I have to say, iPhone 6 was perfect. Oh, I forgot to mention the problem I had with T-Mobile on the Moto X. So it's 2 out of 3 categories are proper. It works with any SIM. It's unlocked. I got this carrier unlocked. And it works with T-Mobile for voice and texting, but it doesn't have the right data frequencies for the UK. So I wasn't able to use it for data at all. Supposedly a firmware update is coming that will make this more compatible. But that's something I have to amend my recommendations now for people who are traveling. As I said, I tell people get you know, an unlocked phone, or have your carrier unlock your phone. AT&T will do that. Or get a phone like the iPhone 6, which is not carrier locked for some reason. Verizon, I think, because the FCC makes them, but they don't lock the SIM slot on the iPhone 6. And then when you get to London, you can either get a SIM card there from 3 or EE or one of the London carriers, or get a if you're a T-Mobile customer, then you're golden. Except you have to make sure your phone works with the radio frequencies in that neck of the woods. In this case, it didn't. So had I only had the one phone, I would have been kind of out of luck. But that's another good thing to do, is bring as many phones as you have. As many different carriers and radios. In my case, I could have brought a dozen phones. I only brought these two, and I'm glad I did. So it's not a T-Mobile issue. It's a limitation of the phone, absolutely. Still recommend T-Mobile. But due to the limitations of the phone, you got to make sure that you can use the carrier frequencies that you'll need in the country you're going to. And that's a little hard to figure out. We've mentioned before a wonderful wiki called Prepaid with Data that does explain a lot of this and gives you suggestions for carriers to use. Man, you get to the airport. I noticed this in London. You get to the airport right there. You get off the plane. There's a vending machine with SIM cards you can buy, pop out, put in your phone. And now you've got data. Of course, you're going to have an international number. You're going to have a London number. So this may not be a great solution, but it does give you, in many cases, affordable unlimited data. £30, I think, for a month of unlimited data on 3. That's pretty good. That's pretty amazing, really. And then that's 4G, if you have the right frequencies. So, you know, that's kind of a fun little tidbit I learned in England. What we ended up doing, EE, which is, I guess that's now a merger between O2 London carrier, T-Mobile and O2. Anyway, they've got a new company, EE. We got a little MiFi card from them. That's another thing you can do, is get a MiFi or one of those little credit card-sized Wi-Fi devices, and then get a SIM for that area. Your phone number won't change. You'll use the Wi-Fi on that. And that was great. Going around town all day, 4G speeds. You have a little, and it was two of us, so we're both using the same MiFi card. Another little tip, very handy. 8888 Ask Leo. If you have a question, a comment, you want to talk high tech, I'd love to do that with you right now. This would be a good chance to do that. Chris Marquardt's coming up. Half past the second hour, about an hour and a half from now, hour 15 minutes from now. He's going to talk about, he has our photos. Chris, I'm sorry, I took a lot of pictures with layers, but, you know, I just got back, and, you know, it takes a while to go through your pictures and sort them all out and post them, and I haven't posted any. So I won't have a dog in that hunt. But Chris Marquardt has picked 3 great pictures from our submissions all month long, illustrating the word or concept layers. We'll take a look at those too. A photo review on the radio. Yes, no one's ever tried this before, but I have. Meanwhile, I'm going to catch up on the tech news of the week. Did anything happen? I did not bend my iPhone, but then again, I didn't try. We talked a little bit about this. I think this is silly, the bend gate for the iPhone. I really think this, you have to work hard at it. It's not going to bend spontaneously like one of Uri Geller's spoons in your pocket. So I do not think this is a problem with the iPhone. Don't sit on it. Okay, good advice. Generally not a good idea to sit on anything made of aluminum and glass. Stay off of it. If you walk on it, if you drive on it, not going to be good. Not sit on it either, especially if you're like me, you're a little heavy. I could see bending it that way. But if you watch the video of the guy bending it, he's working awfully hard. Was it John Ledger, the CEO of T-Mobile, who said, this is bogus. He used a much stronger word. This is bogus. He said, you don't see the guy's face, but I bet he was bright red while he was trying to do it. You don't have to see his face. You can see his fingers, and they are. They're bright red because he's working so hard to bend that phone in half. I wonder if Uri Geller could do that just by looking at it. You will bend phone. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Where did Heather Hammond go? Did she go to London? Kim Schaffer is filling in.
No. She didn't go to London. I think just L.A. not quite so far.
Are you a little groggy from staying up and watching the Giants last night?
God.
18 innings? Holy camoly.
The East Coast time they flashed, it was midnight.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in a bar and I...
Longest postseason game in history.
Forever.
Yeah. And I know we have many listeners in Washington, D.C., and I love you, man, but...
Go Giants!
8888.
I'll say it for you.
That's Kim Schaffer. She just, terrible. So who should I talk to first on the phone today?
How about Jay in Providence, North Carolina? And he has a router question. Security, one router versus another.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hey, Jay, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I'll try not to get too geeky, but I'm leaning toward getting an Apple router. I need a new one, and I've heard, however, that I can get DDWRT if I get a new Asus. I'm wondering which you like best.
So there's two parts to a router. Router is that box that you hook up to your internet connection, allows you to use multiple computers on a single cable or DSL modem. Everybody's got them now. I'm thrilled about that. In fact, I even recommend even if you're only using one computer on your internet connection, getting a router, because it's the first, line of defense. It's the thing that's sitting in public on the internet. Better that than your computer. It's a great form of security. It's a firewall. But there's two things to consider when you buy a router. There's the hardware and there's the software. Because a router really is just a dumb, a primitive computer. It's got a processor, it's got memory, it's got storage, and it's got what we call firmware. It's not quite soft, it's not quite hard, it's firm. It's right in the middle. The firmware is what's talking to the internet, what connecting your computers and stuff. You mentioned DDWRT. This is kind of user-generated firmware. The real problem with routers is that the companies that are making them, these are commodity devices now. The prices, we're talking $30 or $40 in some cases. They're not putting a lot of energy into the software. It's just not, they're not going to do it. And more to the point, when there's a software bug, they rarely fix them, which means that many routers are compromised. They have security flaws, and that's not what you want in a router. You want a router that's going to be kind of robust because, again, it's the interface between you and the internet. It's that barrier. You want it to be good. So Linksys, which a lot of people buy, they have security issues with, for instance, that WPS, that one-button connect, major security flaw, never fixed it. Didn't bother on most of their router because it's a commodity device. Get a new one. The new ones will be fixed. So DDWRT is a way around that. You go to a website. You download this software. It only works on a limited subset of routers. And replace the bad Linksys software with, one hopes, well-written and, more importantly, something people are paying attention to, so well-patched software. I like DDWRT. It works primarily on Linksys routers. The classic is the WRT54G. But, yeah, you mentioned something kind of interesting, which is that you can now get DDWRT on new routers from Asus. So that means that's the best software. It's going to be up to date. It's going to be patchable. Somebody's going to be paying attention to it. So I think that's a good thing. On the other hand, Apple doesn't support DDWRT. Of course, what a surprise. Apple probably locks that stuff down like crazy. But I do think the hardware on the Apple AirPort Extreme is excellent. I'll put my mouth where my money is, if you know what I mean. I bought the AirPort Extreme, and that's what I use. In fact, I remember when I was getting my cable modem installed, I had two routers. And the cable modem guy said, oh, yeah, install the AirPort, much better. I've had great results. One of the things the airport does well is figuring out which channels are available. It helps with congestion. But, you know, on the other hand, I love DDWRT. I just don't have a lot of experience with these ASUS DDWRT routers, so I don't know. I would guess they're good. ASUS is a good company. So the problem with Apple, of course, is they overcharge. They're like three times more than other routers. So what have you looked at the pricing on the ASUS? I haven't. Oh, yeah, they're very affordable, aren't they?
Yeah, it seems like that they're just a tad under an Airport Express, which is what I was leaning toward on Apple.
Yeah, I wouldn't go Express. I'd go Extreme.
Okay.
Express is the thing you plug into the... It's really more for, like, travel. It's a smaller router. It's a travel router, or it's maybe useful for extending the airport using WDS. So you have an Airport Extreme base station, and you have Expresses throughout the house. But if you're gonna, your main router should be an Extreme, not an Express.
Okay.
And that's almost $200. So the top of the line ASUS with DDWRT is, you know, maybe $169. I would look for something that has 802.11ac. That's the new standard. Well, I almost want to say standard. It's not yet a standard. Will be the new standard. And that does give you better results. That does some really interesting things. Get dual band, because that means it runs on both 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. 2.4, we often, if you're in an apartment or you're just in a crowded neighborhood, you'll find that there's so many routers out there. How many routers can you see from your computer? If you can see more than a few, having 5 gigahertz is great, because it means most people aren't. You won't have the same congestion issues. I use 5 gigahertz even in the country, because my Sonos system and a lot of other systems are on that 2.4 gigahertz band. It means it's very crowded. I get better results on 5G. Problem with 5G is getting through walls. 5G is, you know, it's a, I'm sorry, 5, what did I say, G? 5 mega, gigahertz. 5GHZ is higher frequency, bounces off things better. That's not necessarily good, but it's good for privacy. If you're in an apartment, again, 5 gigahertz is a good band. So dual band AC, DDWRT, that's pretty attractive. And then you want to make sure, of course, it has, as every router will these days, WPA2 encryption. That's necessary for protection. I don't like WPS, that one-button binding thing. There's some major security issues with that. If you can disable it, that's great. Like, some of the Linksys routers have a disable button in the settings, but doesn't do anything. It doesn't protect you. So, yeah, I think ASUS and DDWRT sounds pretty good. You know, I should order one of those and see. The RT68R is one that Mike in our chat room says is very good. Dual band AC, DDWRT, that sounds pretty good to me. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. But that was geeky. But, you know, this is important stuff. Now, as I might as well say, if you're using a Wi-Fi router, really important that you lock it down. Turn on WPA2 encryption. Make sure you change the password. Turn off WAN if it's on. WAN administration, that means somebody outside the router could administer it. All of those things are bad. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I still got time? 30 whole seconds? Well, there you go. Chris, I've run out of things to say. I could explain why Windows 9 is really Windows 10. Do you know that? How about that? Microsoft decided the next version of Windows, which I thought was going to come out in the spring, surprisingly, it's a year off, is not going to be Windows 9. That'd be too easy. It's going to be Windows 10. There's a good reason for that, though. And if you stay tuned, you'll find out. Now we go. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our good buddies at Citrix. They really have an amazing line of stuff for business. In fact, you probably know the name Citrix if you work with Windows in business at all. This is the number one company for virtualization and all of that. But Citrix does so much more. For instance, in business, it's very common that you need to send attachments, send files to... Later in the show, I'll be talking to a court reporter who told me after the show that most of her colleagues just, you know, they take a deposition, they do the transcript as it's going, and then they email it as an attachment. And I'm like, what? When you send email with an attachment, that's like sending a postcard. First of all, that's problem number one. Anybody can read it along the way. All those servers, and usually there's more than, you know, a few along the way as the email gets transported. It doesn't go directly to where it's going. It goes through servers along the way. Anybody there can keep that email, look at it, do whatever they want with it. Problem one. Problem two, you know, probably not a big problem with text transcriptions unless it's a really long deposition, but a lot of the files we're sending are big. Many megabytes, sometimes gigabytes, and that, in most cases, is going to break an email system. They just won't. You'll get bounce backs. And you may not even know you got a bounce back, and then that's really a problem. I didn't get that file. You sent me the file. I didn't see the file. That's a bad thing. Finally, the biggest issue, it's a security problem. We tell you all the time, don't open attachments, don't send attachments. That's how viruses are transported. What you should be using is Citrix Share File. Citrix has done it again. They've got a great way to share files. It's also cloud storage, I should add. It's really a great way to share files in business. If you use Outlook, they have an Outlook plugin that makes it look just like email, but it's not. You're sending a secure link to a file, and it's always under your control. You decide who has access and for how long. You decide how many copies they can download. You get notifications telling you who opens those files and when. You can password protect your files, too, for optimal security. I use ShareFile every week to send audio to the radio stations. This is another advantage. They don't talk about this, but it's easy to use. The person you're sending this to does not have to be a tech guru. They don't have to sign up for an account. They just get a very easy-to-use big button that says download the file. I get how big the file is, what the file is. They don't have to understand it. It's just very easy to use, and that, to me, is a big selling point. ShareFile.com. I want you to check it out for your business. From Citrix, it's the easy-to-use business solution for sending, receiving, and sharing files. Go to ShareFile.com. Click the microphone at the top of the page. See where it says podcast listeners? Click that and enter the offer code TECHGUY for 30 days free. Citrix ShareFile. ShareFile.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY and you'll have 30 days absolutely free. I love it, and I use it every week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Why do you think they went right from Windows 8 to Windows 10? So somebody in the chat room said, because 7, 8, 9? Get it? I said, nah. No, actually, I think that somebody did come up with a reason. Microsoft never said. It may be more accurate. It may actually be the 10th consumer version of Windows. So that might... I think the reason they did it is because, this is silly, but a lot of older software, trying to decide if it Windows 95 or 98 was running. This is in the days when a lot of people were still using Windows 3, 3.1.1, 3.1. Newer programs at the time wanted to know if Windows 95 was running or maybe 98 was running. This would have been in the 98 time frame, which is about 1998, 99, 2000. Would just do a simple check. This is kind of like the Y2K problem. They go, well, if Windows begins with a 9, like it's 95 or 98, then that's good or bad, whichever. Probably good. If it doesn't, then we don't want to run because it's Windows 3. But that's code that those programs are still out there, and Microsoft doesn't want to break them. So if they make the version Windows 9, that would might break it? I don't know. Or I guess it would make more sense if it was a Windows XP program that was seeing if Windows 95 or 98 was running. That doesn't seem right. Maybe it's just 10 is a nicer number. I don't know why. I really don't. It doesn't make a lot of sense. That's the only thing I've heard that makes any sense. 8888 Ask Leo. Pierre is on the line from, is it Mentani? Where are you from?
Mentorn.
Mentorn. Is that in California?
Yep. That's, are you familiar with Redlands, California?
Sure.
Yucaipa, California?
Yeah. Okay.
It's right after Redlands.
All right. Well, nice to meet you. Thank you.
It's nice to meet you, too. I've been listening to you since 1995, I believe.
Back when Windows 95 was a big... That's a long time. Well, yeah, I've been doing this since 92, so it's possible, believe it or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what can I do for you?
Well, basically, you know, just I used to be a network technician, so I'm pretty much a little bit savvy about computer, but for some reason, my computer, the computer that my boss let me borrow, is a 95, you know, Windows 95 on it.
Your computer's running Windows 95?
That's right.
Well, now we know. You see, it's for you that Microsoft named it Windows 10. It's your fault. All right. So what's the problem? By the way, I saw somebody putting Windows 9. You can run Windows. Here's to give you an example of how old this program is. Somebody has patched, modified the new Android Wear watches so that they can run Windows 95. So you could run it on your watch if you wanted to.
Get to use,
never mind. Minesweeper, Notepad, all those great programs.
Yep. It has all of the
So what can I do for you?
Yeah, it says the memory is low. And
yeah. How much RAM do you have on that computer?
Oh no, I haven't really checked on that computer.
Probably 8 megabytes. Look, let's face it, the times have changed. That computer is so old. If all we ever wanted to do was run the same software that came out in 1995, I guess we'd be okay. You know, it wasn't around then. I mean, I guess it kind of was. The internet. So modern browser's not going to work. You'll have to go out and find a copy of Netscape. Netscape Navigator or Mosaic. Most of the modern websites won't work. So that's software, too, you know. Sometimes we think, oh, software is the stuff I install. Well, I'm only going to install stuff that came out in that era. Well, but the internet's one is a little bit more up to date than that. Any program that was written after that may still work. And this is the thing that makes this Windows 95, Windows 10 thing credible, is that Microsoft has always tried really hard to make sure that every program that ever ran on Windows will continue to run on the most modern version of Windows. It's hard. They had to introduce compatibility mode, remember, in Windows XP. And they've continued to update that in Windows 7 and Windows 8. There's still compatibility mode and all this. But there's a lot of code, I'm told, a lot of code in Windows that is specifically to certain programs, like, say, PFS Write, designed for Windows 3, to make sure it will still work. But honestly, it's not merely going to be the older software in the operating system. Windows 95 machines typically had 8 megabytes of RAM. Megabytes, not gigabytes. You couldn't run a modern program. Most of the pictures I took on my trip are bigger than 8 megabytes. You couldn't run a modern program in that. Hard drives in that era were 500 megabytes. Or less. We didn't have gigabyte or 2 gigabyte hard drives, let alone terabyte hard drives. I think it's probably time to get a newer computer. The good news is you can get new Windows 8 computers for under $500. And I think you really need to do that. At this point, even with what you've got, even putting Linux on it is probably going to be tough. There are versions of this free operating system designed for very old hardware, but nothing that old. Dennis, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings, but that's the way it is. Dennis is on the line from Arkansas. Hi, Dennis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Hey, I've been listening to you since the Windows 95 days.
You're not alone, apparently. Yeah.
But went through a lot of changes since then, all the versions.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a Mac guy all the way now.
Yeah. All right. That's good.
But I've got a question for you about Apple TV and the internet. My cable provider in the place where I live, Paragould, Arkansas, it's Gould's kind of tricked the tricks on me. but anyway, I was with them for a year with their supposed business package, and it was supposed to got up to a whopping 8 gigabytes, and I was lucky to get 2, 3 maybe.
Wait a minute. Nothing's 8 gigabits. First of all, it'd be bits. And nothing's 8 gigabits. You mean 8 megabits?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay,
you know.
Yeah. If you could get 1 gigabit, you'd be happy.
Yeah.
But you're not getting 8 megabits. What are you typically getting?
So
DSL? Is it DSL?
No, it was cable.
Cable, all right.
What I did was AT&T offered to up their packages up to 20 gigabytes and you know, a usage. And then lately they doubled that for the same price, and I'm up to 40. But I was doing fine on 20, believe it or not, and I'm on the internet a lot. I do blogging.
Do you have a question? Yeah.
Well, okay. I've got Apple TV. It's the older version, and I don't have a Wi-Fi network in my house now. So I tried to use my hotspot to my Airport Extreme, and I just could not get it to hook up. So I tried to get the Apple TV.
All right, we're out of time. Thank you. I will talk about this when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. So our last caller has an Apple TV, doesn't have Wi-Fi, wants to connect it to his router. Now, unfortunately, a lot of times, and that is really unfortunate, a lot of times you get the router that you get is the router that comes with your DSL modem or your cable modem. I hate that because these are usually junkier routers, less capable routers, more difficult to figure out than if you had your own consumer-grade router like one of the Airport Extremes we mentioned earlier or an Asus router. It's better to have your own. So the best thing to do if you can when you get your cable company or your phone company to set up your internet is say, can you please give me a modem? I know I need a cable modem or a DSL modem that converts the weird signal coming in over the copper into something I can use, Ethernet. But can I then put my own Wi-Fi router in there? It's one of the reasons he doesn't have a Wi-Fi router, probably. So what they'll do is they'll have their modem just be a modem, not be a router. And either they'll give you that hardware or they'll disable the router portion of the modem. And then you can hook up your own router. Then it's going to be trivial to hook up your Apple TV. You just connect an Ethernet cable. And it should all work fine. Since you're using the router that came with the company, then it maybe gets a little bit more tricky. And I'm not sure. Somebody in the chat room said you're going to have to good luck figuring this out. You're going to have to DMZ your Apple TV. Or you're going to figure out what ports to forward. I did not know that the Apple TV needed port forwarding, but maybe it does. Maybe it does. I don't think it does. I think you could just hook it up. These two-wire routers are just not my favorite in the world. Moving on, Sue in Redondo Beach. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
You bet. I'm a PC girl, and I bought a beautiful Lenovo about 3 years ago. And I went into this website, stupid me, that said, watch Bob Dylan play live on stage. And I knew the minute I clicked on it, it fried my computer.
Really? Really?
Oh, my gosh.
Really? They're using Bob Dylan now to fish people?
It was so mean.
Really?
So
that seems
mean.
Odd. I could see maybe, Keisha. Bob Dylan? They're using Bob Dylan to fish people. So you clicked on it, and what happened?
These lines went across my screen like zigzag, and it shorted out.
I don't think that has to do with any. There's no website you could go to that would short your computer out.
You don't think it was a virus that somebody hacked into? And
well, here's how this can happen. You know, in fact, we saw it happen recently with ads on Google's DoubleClick network. If you can get somebody with a vulnerable computer to go to your website, you can hack them. But that there's two things going on there. First, vulnerable computer. If your computer's not up to date always, and I'm sure you run Windows Update without fail, every second Tuesday when Microsoft puts out those critical patches, you install those. Because then if you don't, you'll have a vulnerable computer. But if you're doing those patches, you probably don't have a vulnerable computer. Oh, wait a minute. Bad guys, because Microsoft's been so good about this, now say, well, if we can't get them on Windows, maybe we can find a vulnerability in something else they use on the internet, the browser or browser plugins. Flash is one that is commonly hacked because Adobe has not been very good about keeping it up to date. Adobe Reader, same problem. Shockwave, which is a variant of Flash, predates Flash, same thing. Java from Oracle, same thing. So any of the things that run automatically when your browser goes to a site that has that kind of content on it, they're also a target for bad guys. So watch Bob Dylan live while it's a strange come on. I guess would work with a certain subset of people. If you go to that site and then the site has specially crafted malware video on it that requires Flash, your Flash launches, and you haven't kept your Flash up to date, yeah, you could get hacked. It's so important. Anything that goes on the internet must be kept up to date. That includes your operating system, your browser, but also any plugins your browser uses. My suggestion, turn off Java, not JavaScript, two different things. Java, turn that off in the browser. There's this, in your browser settings, all browsers, you can disable Java. Don't disable JavaScript. You kind of need that, but do disable Java. There's no reason to run Java on a website. And if you get to a website, like say you're, you know, you have an old school solitaire game that uses Java, it will say, hey, should I allow Java here? And you can explicitly allow it. But you don't want it to happen automatically. You should always keep Flash up to date. In fact, I recommend if you use Flash a lot, use Google's Chrome. They keep it up to date and they keep it sandboxed. They keep it isolated from the rest of the system. Chrome is a better choice for using Flash. Someday Flash will be gone. We won't have to worry about this anymore. Similarly, if you're still using Adobe Reader to read PDF files, that's okay. Keep it up to date. And I would disable automatic opening of PDF files in your browser settings. Another thing, anything automatic you want to watch out for. Because really think twice when your browser then says, oh, I need to load a PDF. Think, did I request one? Is this an appropriate thing? It's possible, and I hope this didn't happen to you, Sue, but it's possible that the quote Bob Dylan live performance site had wasn't really Bob Dylan's live performance, but a carefully crafted bad Flash. And if you didn't keep Flash up to date, maybe. I think it's not that. I think it's much more likely that your hardware started to play some video and went, it was on its last legs anyway, and it said, that's it. If you're going to make me listen to Bob Dylan, I give up. And it just croaked. Is it work? Okay, I'm going to go back to you, Sue. Is it working now at all?
No, my guy can't get into it. It just says no operating system.
Yeah, your hard drive failed. It wasn't the bad guys. Because the bad guys don't want your hard drive to fail. They want your system to continue to operate normally because they want to use your system. They're not out to get you. They're out to use you. So your hardware. It's just coincidental. Yeah, it's probably a bad hard drive. Could be something else. Could be you had a power surge at that very moment. That kind of sounds like what happened.
Because
you had a zzz. That sounds like something, some electrical surge fried some stuff. So your guy, I'm surprised, what did your guy say?
Well, he tried, he can't, you know, F1, you know, you keep pressing the F keys, and it just keeps going around in a circle, and we can't get anywhere. Should I throw it away?
You need a better guy.
Oh, God.
He didn't really try much. You need a better guy. That's it. That's something you can be fixed. You can bring it to
the... Oh, it is?
Yeah. It may just be that the hard drive is, there's something wrong physically with the computer. That's all it is.
Well, somebody told me you can't get into a Lenovo. Once it's done...
No. Don't listen to... You're listening to all these bad people. Don't listen to them.
Okay.
Take it. The hard thing is, who's good? How do we find a good computer repair shop? That's what you need to figure out.
I have one.
Good.
Yeah.
And just take it in and say, look at, and they're going to say, oh, yeah, your hard drive fried. Or it could be that you had a power surge. It's a laptop?
Yeah, it's a PC.
It's a desktop.
Yeah.
Sometimes desktops, this can happen. Power surge hit it, fried some circuitry. Could be your video card fried. Could be something else. We don't know. But the only thing you could figure out is it's a hardware issue, and you got to bring it to somebody who's going to look at the hardware. Yeah, that's all it is.
Oh, you made my day.
Whew.
Thank you so much.
I hope you had a backup. Do you have a good backup?
No. I didn't want to tell you that.
Sue.
No, I'm so bad.
Well, no, I don't care. It's not my data.
No.
But I should point out, it might be that your hard drive's dead and whatever was on there is gone.
I know it. That's what I'm
hope that's not it, but it doesn't have to be. It could be the controller fried. It could be a lot of things in between you and the hard drive. The hard drive might just be fine, but you do need to take it to a shop to find out.
I sure will.
Thank you, Sue. I'm sorry. That's bad. I wish we need some way to verify who's a good computer repair guy and who's a doofus. Because, you know, any old doofus, there's no licensing. There's no certification. Any old doofus can hang out a shingle, say, I'll fix your computer, and know nothing.
I keep hitting F1. Nothing happens here. I don't know what's... must be broke.
It's broke. So, no, you want somebody who can actually say, this component is fried or this component is fried. And that takes intelligence, a voltmeter, some equipment. It's not a trivial thing. And we need a way to... We need to figure out who's good. I don't know. Is it Angie's List? I don't know. You need a way to figure that out. The Tech Guy Podcast today brought to you by the number one global market leader in remote support. Who could that be? Whoever could that be? Why, it's Citrix. And GoToAssist. GoToAssist, still number one in remote support. And, of course, they added new features that are just fabulous. GoToAssist.com, that's the place to go. You get remote support, the service desk, which helps you manage tickets and so forth. They really have figured this out. It's great for support on the go. You literally can support folks from your iPad or your Android tablet or your smartphone. And right now, this is a good time to sign up for GoToAssist. If you're in remote support, if you're in the IT business, the software support business, you really got to check out GoToAssist. And if you do it right now, before October 10th, you'll get another Citrix product of your choice free for 6 months. What? Yes. Buy one, get one free right now through October 10th. Visit GoToAssist.com and get started. No offer code for this. Very easy. Just click that Get Started button. Try it free. 30-day trial and a Citrix tool free for 6 months. GoToAssist.com. If you're in support and you're not using GoToAssist, you really ought to check it out. And if you're doing onesie twosies and you'd like to become a bigger company, do managed services, that kind of thing, this is a great solution. GoToAssist.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. In fact, our digital photo guru, Chris Marquardt, comes up at 1:30 to talk. And I think we're going to do a photo review our assignment. If you got one in there to our tech guy group on Flickr, then maybe yours will be one of the assignments we review. That's coming up. Meanwhile, continue to take your calls, 8888-ASK-LEO. We're also on the web, techguylabs.com, a great place to go. If you want to, you know, you hear something, you don't have to write it down. It's all there. Thanks to James DeRuvo, who's writing everything down as I talk. And then Josh Windisch, who in our office, who later adds audio and video so you can listen to past shows. 1,124 of them. 10 years worth of shows. And you can go hour by hour, see all the questions, all the answers. And comment. I'd love to get your comments. TechGuyLabs.com. Armando is on the line from Fontana, California. He's next. Hi, Armando.
Hey, how you guys doing today, man?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good.
All right.
I want to know what's the difference between the Galaxy Tab Pro 8.4 and the Galaxy Tab 8.4.
The Pro versus the regular.
Yeah, because I went on.
You know, Samsung's an amazing company. They're huge. And they're able to do 18 different phones, 18 different tablets, and it's not always clear what the difference is between the various tablets. Are you in a store?
Yeah, I'm actually doing shopping. Sorry about that.
Then keep shopping. I'll talk. I'll let you listen so we don't hear the store background. There's the Galaxy Tab. There's the Galaxy Note. The Note has a touch screen on it with a digitizer that gives you better. All of them are touch, obviously, but you get 10 points and you get pressure sensitivity. They've actually used a Wacom touch screen on the Galaxy Note tablets. And then the Tab Pro versus. I'm going to have to look this one up because I'll be honest with you. My guess is the Tab Pro is more expensive. But, oh, yeah, I see. It's also bigger, right? They have a 12.2-inch Tab Pro. Well, no, and then I also see they have smaller Tab Pros. They go, this is what's so confusing about Samsung. They go from 8.4, 10.1, and they have three different sizes of screen. I don't know. You're asking the wrong guy. I'm going to go to the website and see, and you could probably do the same thing yourself. They sizes range from 7 inches to 12.2 inches. Some have Wi-Fi only. Some have 4G LTE. So it's really interesting to watch the different philosophies that Samsung and their chief competitor in this space, Apple, have. Apple's decided, and this goes back to Steve Jobs when he came back to Apple in 1997. Remember, he was fired at Apple, wandered alone in the desert for about 10 years. Actually, he's kind of started Pixar and Next, and he did a few other things. But meanwhile, I think also, you know, guy had some life lessons, learned some, you know, personal skills, interpersonal skills, came back in 1997. And by the time he came back to Apple after 10 years, they had products all over the place. Not only did they have products all over the place, they had other companies making Apple compatibles. First thing Steve Jobs does is he says, no more Apple compatibles. Then he goes up to the whiteboard. This actually happened at an executive meeting. And he draws a big plus sign on the whiteboard, four quadrants. And he says, we are, you know, one of the things we are going to do is we're going to get rid of a lot. We have too many different products. We're going to have home products and we're going to have pro products. Home is the left column. Pro is the right column. We're going to have portable products. We're going to have desktop products, top and bottom. That's it. So there'll be a home laptop, a home desktop. That's the iMac. There'll be a pro laptop. That's the MacBook Pro. And we'll have a pro desktop. That's the Mac Pro. We're going to eliminate all these other product lines. It's too confusing for consumers. In fact, Jobs, one of the things Jobs said I thought was brilliant, he said, the most important thing you can say is no. And he was very good at saying, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. In fact, it's only since Steve passed, and by the way, almost exactly 3 years ago. Oh, it is exactly 3 years ago, October 5th, 2011. Wow. 3 years ago when he passed, there was one iPhone. And now there are, well, several. There's two current models, and they're continuing to sell a couple of the older models. I think there's three or four, maybe five different iPhones that you can go buy. That's only since he's passed. He was really good about saying, no, we're going to have a very clear product line, and there'll be pretty much one and only one of all of this stuff. And then it's inevitable as time goes by, you start to, and look what's happened to Samsung. You can't, I can't even tell. I don't know. The pro and the not pro, I don't know. So the best thing to do, really, I think, is what Apple's done. On the other hand, as a consumer and as a consumer advocate, which is what I am, I want there to be choice. But I think the choice can be between Apple and Samsung, not between 50 different Samsung products and 50 different Apple products. Let's let the companies make different kinds. So, and I think you can see very clearly that it's a little confusing, even if you want to buy a Samsung. Do I get a Note 4? Do I get a Note 4 Edge? Do I get an S5? Samsung's just announced the new Galaxy S5. What is it called? It's the fashion one. It's all metal. Great to have choice, but it can confuse consumers. And I think Steve was kind of right. Say no. Say no. Limit the product line. So to answer your question, I really don't know. I'm even on the website. And I'm pressing a button that says, see all Galaxy tabs. There are 47 models. 47 models of Galaxy Tabs. There are two models of iPads. I guess you could say there are more if you include the different memory sizes and Wi-Fi versus LTE, but there ain't 47. And the difference in the Pro, it looks like the Pro has more RAM, bigger screen, Office apps, powerful processor. They're designing the Pro for people who want to do more work. I think, frankly, you could decide by price. But boy, you know, don't you see how confusing this is? 47 different models, and the prices are all over the place from $179 to $649. And no, I'm sorry, $700. The top of the line Pro, $750. That's a 64 gig Wi-Fi 12.2-inch screen. Now, Apple may muddy the waters. We know that October 16th, Apple's going to announce its new iPads. And you know what? Jobs passed away 3 years ago, and it's a different company. It's Tim Cook's company now. And I could see them kind of making the line more complex. And you never would have seen a giant phone like the 6 Plus under Steve. I don't think he'd ever approve something like that. It makes it harder for developers, too. You know, you're writing software now for a variety of different screen sizes. It just makes it harder. So the chat room says, OTT in the chat room says, go for the Pro 8.4. It's awesome. Big, powerful. It's designed really to be almost a computer. Running Android still, but almost a computer. In the sense, well, it is a computer, but in the sense that it is, you can do office productivity, you can do multiple windows. October 16th, according to people who are usually right on these things, Apple will announce new iPads, maybe even a Pro. I think the rumors are pretty strong. There'll be a 12-inch iPad. That'll be interesting. An iPad Pro. They also rumored they'll announce high-res iMacs and maybe high-res. I would like to see high-res Retina displays for the MacBook Air. And, of course, Yosemite, the next version of OS 10, 10.10. All coming up in 11 days, just so that you're ready for that. All right, we're going to take, thanks for the question. And, you know, and a tip of the hat, actually, I'll read some of the letter that Tim Cook sent to Apple employees on Friday, on the third anniversary of Steve's passing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go back to the phones. Lori on the line, Glendale, California. Hi, Lori, Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leah. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Sorry, I'm going to find a quiet place.
You know, no, that's okay. I'm not against anybody shopping. I just, you know, if it's really noisy, I'll turn your mute your sound. But
thank you.
Yeah.
Well, you were when I first tuned in. You were talking about the router and the necessity that it's the first line of defense from the internet. My question is I sign onto the internet from my hotspot from my phone? Do I need a router?
No, your phone's the router.
Okay, all right.
That's so when you're using your phone as a hotspot, it's just like a Wi-Fi access point, and then your computer logs it. That's how you use your internet. How's that working for you?
Yeah. It works all right.
It's fast enough?
Yeah. Well, sometimes it lags, and it's frustrating, but...
The only negative on mobile connectivity like that, you're using your phone's 4G connection, is that it's not consistent because it depends how many other people are using that cell phone hotspot. You know, so it's going to be worse in the busy times of day, great in the middle of the night, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's when I seem to be using it, the middle of the night.
But cell carriers lately have really understood that this is important, and they've really increased the speeds. This is a good thing. Now, of course, you have to pay your carrier a little extra, maybe $20 a month extra for this. But it's
cheaper than me getting the internet on
its own. Exactly. And I think you're already doing it on your phone. Why pay another $60 a month for internet at home if you're content with that service? And it sounds like it's working for you. Who's your carrier?
T-Mobile.
T-Mobile. Yeah. They're very affordable, aren't they?
Yeah. It is.
Good. Well, that's your line of defense is your phone. And the good news is mobile phones, because they can't, you know, the mobile operating systems came a little bit later. They're much more secure than your desktop computer. Lately, we've seen some problems. There've been always little Android malware here and there. But, you know, you've got to actually do something kind of dumb. Like, oh, I like this desktop wallpapers application from Russia. This sounds Russian wallpapers is good. You just install right now. No problem. Free. Then if you get that, you get virus maybe. And the good news is people find out about this very quickly. Google kills it very quickly. So you have to actually, it's hard. I've never, ever had a problem with Android. OS, iOS, similar situation where Apple vets it. Sometimes they miss a few. Something sneaks in. The hackers very sophisticated. They do interesting things. For instance, I sound like Boris Badenov. Moose and squirrel. What they do is they put multiple apps on, right? But the trick is then you have to download each of the apps. Each app doesn't have any malware by itself, but when they combine, it forms malware. You know, it's like puzzle pieces, four of them. and Apple can't really tell that any individual application is problematic, but as a whole they are. But that doesn't work too well because you have to download all four. Hey, you got Moose. You want Squirrel? Natasha also. Get all four for a complete set. And then, you know, you're hacked. Good news. Mobile device, very safe. Very, very safe. Good for user. Bad for hacker. Taylor in Coronado. Is it Coronado, California? Leo Laporte.
It's Corona.
Corona. Hi, Taylor. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, long time since I called.
Long time. Oh, hi, Taylor Karras. Good to talk to you. What's up?
Hey, I'm looking for my Canon T3i currently suits in 1080p, and I'm looking for a DSLR that can suit 4K video. Do you have any recommendations?
For a DSLR that supports 4K. Yeah, almost all modern SLRs are 4K because 4K isn't that challenging for a still camera. Now, of course, you want it to record at 4K. That's another matter entirely. I'm not sure exactly what does the best 4K video right now. I think it's the Panasonic's. Not sure which one. Is it the GH1? I'll have to do some research on that. But I think Panasonic's, these are Micro Four Thirds cameras. And that just shows you don't have to have a super high-res sensor to do 4K video. Because 4K in video is still a lower resolution than a decent digital still. Panasonic would be one to look at. You know what? Chris Marquardt's got. I'll tell you what, Taylor. Keep listening. I'll ask Chris Marquardt. Nowadays, video, silly to buy a standalone video camera. Even your point-and-shoot cameras can do 4K in some cases. In fact, even your smartphone, the Galaxy S5, can do 4K. You know, it's got a small sensor, highly compressed, not going to look as good as a, you know, super high-quality movie-style 4K. But I think with any DSLR, you should be able to get decent 4K, I think, these days. The GH4, that's the one I was thinking of. The Panasonic GH4. A lot of people raving about the video on that. I have a Sony A7S, which does very good, I think, 60p 4K video. That's a really nice camera for video. But now we're talking thousands of dollars. Paco is in Calabasas, California. Hi, Paco.
We're going to live in one and rent the other three.
Oh, good. Are you there, Paco?
Right.
Okay, Paco's on another line right now. Let's see. Let's put him on hold. And go to Tom in Warren, Ohio. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, can you hear me okay?
I hear you great. GoPro, somebody's suggesting GoPro. Those are okay. The lenses aren't super great, but they do a pretty good job considering how inexpensive they are. What can I do for you, Tom?
Speaking of photography, I love your hyperlapse from London that you did out of the, what was that, the bus?
Yeah, thank you. That's on my Google Plus page if you go to...
Right.
Google Plus and look for Leo Laporte. Yeah. So I shot that with Hyperlapse, which is a really cool app from the Instagram folks. It does two things. It allows you to do a time-lapse video, and you can set the time-lapse from none at all to up to 12 times faster than real time. That's what I did with the London bus. It does smoothing. Say again?
The cyclist. I was surprised how many cyclists.
Oh, it's scary. So I'm on the upper deck of a London double-decker bus at sunset, driving across town from St. Paul's down to our hotel on Bond Street. And I just put the camera in the front. It was a 25-minute bus ride at 12 times speed. So that's just a couple of minutes to watch it. And yeah, you see all the pedestrian traffic. This is a rush hour. Pedestrian traffic.
Oh, no wonder. Yeah.
You see a lot of double-decker buses, a lot of those black London taxis. It's kind of fun. But for me, it was an amazing feat. It's just an iPhone 6 running Hyperlapse. Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, it was really
Yeah, the
neat.
Hyperlapse software uses the gyroscope and accelerometers in the iPhone to detect motion and to stabilize it. And it does a remarkable job. I mean, obviously, this bus is bouncing around a bit. But you would never know it on the video.
Pretty neat.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, my question was, I got my iPhone 6. Oh, we missed a touchdown. I'm watching football.
Which game are you watching?
I'm watching the Cleveland Browns versus Tennessee Titans.
All right. And I think you're a Titans fan. Are you a Titans fan? Oh, no, you're a Cleveland fan. You're a Browns fan.
Browns fan, yeah.
All right. Hang on, Tom. We got to take a break. But we'll be back right after the bottom of the hour. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up, and then I'll get to your question. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I had a nice experience today. We, you know, we upgraded all the phones, and there's this trickle-down thing, and so we got new iPhones, and then this last year's iPhone went to the kids, and then we had, it was an iPhone 4 was the final thing. We took out of service an iPhone 4, and of course, Lisa went to gazelle.com because, we know when it's time to get rid of the old and bring in the new, the best place to get money for your phone is gazelle.com. So she got a quote on the 4. I think it was it was $30. They just sent us a $120 Amazon gift card. What? So the Gazelle, when we sent it into Gazelle, and by the way, they pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. The Gazelle experts looked at it and said, no, you got it wrong. This is, I don't know, what was it? I don't remember what it was. It was unlocked for whatever reason, they upped our offer by a lot. You get the 5% just for saying, I want an Amazon gift card. You can't get paid by check or PayPal, but if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, that 5% makes a difference. And I have never heard of a company in my life that will give you more money than they promised you. So I want you to check it out. Here's the deal. You go to gazelle.com, and by the way, clear out your gadget drawer. That's what Lisa said this morning. She said, let's find more stuff. This is fun. We must have old stuff. I said, yeah, I have a lot of old stuff. We've used Gazelle many times before, actually. It's kind of a regular thing for us when the new stuff comes out. But this is the first time they've ever bumped me like 400%. Wow. Get your free offer. You just, you know, answer some questions about the condition of the object, what it is. They'll buy broken cell phones too, by the way. iPhones, iPads, tablets. You want to get the new Microsoft Surface Pro 3? Sell your Surface 2 at Gazelle. Your old Samsungs, your phones, your tablets, they'll buy them. Apple computers. Once you get a quote, it's good for 30 days, by the way. That's awesome. So you don't have to, if you know, for instance, as we do, I think, that there's going to be a new iPad announcement in a couple of weeks, now's the time to get the quote before the announcement, right? So you're going to get the maximum value, and you're not committed. You know, I have an iPad Air. It is, let's see, what is it? I think it's AT&T, and it's 64 gigs. Let's get an offer. So I'm going to get that offer. Now, that's locked in. $305. That's locked in for a good condition iPad. But as I said, if it's better condition than I said, or it has more memory or whatever, they'll give you more. They'll automatically fix that. Now, that's the offer, but I don't have to do anything about it. I can go on, get more quotes. Then, in 2 weeks, when the new iPad comes out and I say, yes, I do want to sell this, that quote has been locked in for 30 days. They'll send you a box, pay the shipping, you'll get it turned around fast. Gazelle's paid nearly $170 million out to over a million customers, and I just think they're a great service. You know, it's the easiest, the simplest way. If there's stuff, you know, maybe you've been saying, I really ought to sell this, put an ad in the paper or go on eBay, and you're putting it off. Look, just do this. It's fast, it's easy, and you're going to get cash in your pocket. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, Gazelle. .com. Try it. You'll like it. Can you believe that? 30. Lisa, last week she said, because this was Mike's old phone, so gave him a new one, got the old one. She said, we got $30. I said, well, it's, you know, okay. So she sends it in. It's $120. I have never heard of that in my life. But I have heard Gazelle do this many times. What kind of business does that? They don't have any obligation to, but I think they're a good business. They want your business. Gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He is Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. And Chris, you gave us an assignment. We're going to review the pictures illustrating the word layers.
Hey, and we got some awesome results.
We got great a lot stuff of them. The way this works, yes. If people take pictures, they have to be new ones. Submit them to our Flickr group, the tech guy group, and then Chris will go through them and crazy, but I know, review three of them on the radio. So I'm just looking at the slideshow. There's so many beautiful pictures. I had a bunch of pictures. I considered layers as I was shooting, and certainly a lot of the beautiful architecture in London is very heavily layered, but I just didn't get it. You know, I just got back, so I didn't really get time to process my stuff yet. That's my excuse. Did you take any layers?
Not specifically for this assignment.
Yeah,
no.
you see.
So I'm guilty as well.
So pick our three and let's talk about it.
Let's do that. Let me see. We had 72 participants here. So
thank you, everybody. That's great.
Pretty cool stuff and layers in every sense of the word. There were like a stack of paper. Someone shot a picture of a 3D printer, which also kind of works in layers. It puts layers on top of each other to create something three-dimensional. And then, let's go through them. The first one is by MJ Muscato, and it's up the 110 LA.
Boy, so there's layers on those overpasses, you bet. Very heavily
layered.
It's
amazing. And yeah. I've been there years ago, and this is just amazing how the road pretty much layers. I don't know how many layers there are, 5, 6?
Yeah.
At some point, so it's amazing how they build those. So that's a shot of that. And what MJ Muscato did is he did a bit of, I think it's a bit of HDR processing here, so you get some nice detail in the underside of the bridges and things. So it certainly gives you that feeling of, wow, there's lots going on. And it's not just layered from the top to the bottom, but also a depth layer. So from close to far, you see lots of different things behind each other.
Nice job, MJ Muscato.
Pretty cool, yep.
Picture two.
The next one by Frank V1. Of
Wait a minute. This is a magic act. There's
it's a magic act.
An orange sliced into four pieces, and they're floating.
They're floating. I suspect there is a bit of Photoshop trickery there. I guess I could guess it's probably hung from above by strings, and
you
then
think
the strings photoshopped out.
Edited out the strings, yeah.
Yeah, actually, that is fairly easy to do. If you take one picture with the orange and then another picture without the orange, and then you can take those parts that are covered up by the strings from the first picture and just put them on there, and you won't even see that there have been any wires anymore.
Yeah, no, it's really well done. Yeah,
kind of an orange made into layers. So that was interesting.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, thank you, Frank V, and for a little Photoshop trickery. That's okay. We're allowing that.
Oh yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Anything. We don't care. And this is a traditional sunset, huh?
It is. It's by Sean Stageberg. And what he did is he shot, and that's one of the reasons I chose this picture is because it's a landscape shot, but it's not a traditional landscape shot in the sense that it's shot with a wide angle lens. So it's not like a 24 or 18 millimeter or something. No, that's a long focal length. That's a telephoto lens. And you can tell because I guess it's the moon, actually. The moon is the moon is quite big in the picture. So it means that's probably, I would say 600, 800 millimeters or something. And what that does is on the bottom of the picture, you get all these layers by the, well, you can't really tell, are those mountains? To a certain extent, those are hills and mountains. And then I guess if you go higher up, those get substituted by clouds. But sometimes you can't even tell, is it a cloud or a mountain? But you get like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 layers in this picture just by using a telephoto lens and kind of compressing that depth in the picture. That's the effect you get when you shoot these kind of pictures with a telephoto lens.
Pretty neat. This is what I actually thought when I heard you say layers, because I've seen many landscapes like this where it's a beautiful effect. I really like it. And he's done a nice job with this, especially
You got to keep your eyes open for landscapes when there are mountains and things that layer. A long lens will help you do the job.
Mm, very nice. So, Chris, those are our three. I don't want to call them winners, the three picks, but there are lots more. On Flickr.com, if you go to the Tech Guy group, I think if you go to Flickr/groups/Tech Guy, will that work?
Yep, that will work.
But you can also just search for the Tech Guy group once you get to Flickr, and you'll find it because there's so many people in it and so many pictures. What are we going to do for our new assignment?
So I always wanted to see some of the faces of the participants of these assignments.
Yeah.
So I was thinking self-portrait, but then a self-portrait is kind of boring, you know, the classic selfie. So I thought, why not go for a bit of a more wacky, more fun kind of a selfie? That's the one I call a shelfie. So
what? What?
Here's how that goes, okay? Put your camera on a shelf about a foot be above your head.
All right.
Set it to self-timer, 10-second self-timer, and okay. then jump up the moment the camera fires.
You have to be in the air.
You have to be in the air. Give it several tries. Do it together with some friends.
Flying shelfie.
I promise you won't. You never laughed that much,
that's so much
than
fun.
Doing this. It's a real fun exercise, and we call it the shelfie.
And do some poses as you're leaping in the air, right?
Well, it's hard enough to hit the top spot at the 10-second mark, but give it a
does
try.
Does the phone like go 10, 9, 8? I guess some do. Some go 3. Well, mine goes 3, 2, 1, so I could do that. In fact, that's the nice thing on the Moto X. You could say, okay, Moto X, take a selfie, and then it gives you a countdown, and you go... So you could put that on the shelf. You could say, okay, Moto X, take a selfie. And then it'll give you a countdown and you can leap. I'm going to do this one. I'm going to do this one.
Okay, me too.
And you know, there's a great, the folks at Joby, J-O-B-Y, who make the GorillaPod, just sent me the greatest little thing. I don't have it with me. I brought it to London with me. It's kind of a personal tripod that folds up and you can put it in your pocket. It's not very big, very thick. But when you unfold it, it has like a holder for your phone that's extensible, so you could get it almost any size phone will fit into it, and then three little legs, so it's just like a little phone tripod. Very cool. Handy. Yeah, Joby, J-O-B-Y sells these. I don't know what they sell them for. They're not, can't be very expensive, but given that we're in the, I saw a lot of selfie sticks, we are in the land of the selfie.
Oh, really? Okay.
In London, selfie sticks
I've
everywhere.
I've seen those, yeah.
Yeah. But this is like this. They call this, let me see if I can find the name of it. They sent me a couple. It's the Grip Tight Micro Stand. And it's just a clever $29.95. It's made out of solid metal. So it's pretty solid. And, I guess if it's a selfie enabler. Selfie enabler. If you have the iPhone 6 Plus, you'll get the XL. For most other phones, the regular will do. But it's a clever idea.
Looks like a fun thing.
Yeah, I'm going to do a selfie. Everybody do a selfie. So after you take the picture, put the tag shelfie, S-H-E-L-F-I-E, into the photo and post it on Flickr, and then send it to the tech guy group. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will welcome you into the group if you're not already a member. Welcome your picture. One picture a week. It's okay. In this case, it's not okay. Do you have to be a cell phone? Does it have to be a smartphone?
No, it can be any phone. Okay. Any phone that has a self-timer.
But a lot of these, or camera, a lot of these will be on the phone, I think. I like it. You're a shelfie enabler.
Let's see. Let's. I'm looking forward to the results. This is going to be fun. This is going to be real fun.
I can't wait. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Chris Marquardt's a photo guy. He's at discoverlightroom.com. It's a great place to find his Lightroom video tutorial. Really useful. Really great. Pay what you think it's worth. I think it's worth a lot.
Me too.
and he also does some great workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com and a great podcast, too. Thank you, Chris. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sure.
Leo Laporte.
The Tech Guy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was taking a selfie. Shelfie. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888. Ask Leo. I'm out of breath from jumping. If you want to take a shelfie, maybe we'll be reviewing your shelfie next month for Chris Marquardt. That's fun. The jumping part makes it fun. You know, the selfie's one thing, but to get you up in the air, that's another. 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking to Tom before the break, and I'm sorry, Tom, we ran out of time, but let me get to your question now.
Yeah, you're back.
I am back. Sorry about that, Tom, from Warren, Ohio. Cleveland Browns fan.
Yes, we just scored a touchdown. Wonderful. We got like 23-28. My iPhone 6 Plus, it keeps asking me for my voicemail password. Do you think that's because of the iOS 8?
Just because of your silly... Who's your phone company?
AT&T.
Yeah, I have the same thing. It's just... So... What happened to visual voicemail? I'm going to have to get my iPhone experts in here because the last time I used an iPhone a couple of years ago, one of the big selling points in 2007 when the iPhone came out was visual voicemail. But now I notice on both my iPhones, I actually am still calling a voicemail number. And I guess that's because the carriers don't automatically do visual voicemail anymore. You have to pay for it. And if you're not doing visual voicemail, then you'll be calling that number. Or, you know, the in the old days, you'd press and hold the number one, and it would dial the either your own phone number or a special voicemail number, and then it would ask for a password, a four-digit number. Do you remember that, what that number is?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember that many. I don't even remember setting up any password. It just says contact AT&T.
Yeah. You can do that. If you forget your password, you call them up. They'll reset it. It's a good idea to have a password, even if you're using visual voicemail. You don't want people getting your voicemail. And unfortunately, it's a fairly easy thing to hack and a popular thing for hackers to hack. In fact, it's a potential security risk if you use a second factor authentication that places a phone call. Google does this, for instance. You can have the special second factor authentication number normally you'd have it as a text or use an authentication program. You can have them call you and say 4735. And one of the hacks people have used is to reroute your phone to voicemail, then ask for the second factor, and then call your voicemail and get it. So it's a good idea to have a security pin on your voicemail anyway. If you haven't set one, it's usually the last four digits of your phone number.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't recall setting one up, but I'll have to see.
Yeah, I don't either, and that's the problem. When's the last time we used this, you know?
So, yeah, we haven't.
Yeah, we've had this lovely visual voicemail. I don't know exactly what's happened, even on AT&T. I don't seem to have visual voicemail. Maybe I have to call them and set it up again. I don't know. But, yeah, that's what that's what they want. You have to enter your password. It needs to have that password to make sure that it's actually you. And that's a good thing, as I mentioned, because that's a common hack.
Okay, very good, Leo.
So I've had the same exact thing. In fact, one of the things is I've been having trouble with, Tom, when I moving back to the iPhone, is that the iPhone pesters you a lot. For instance, the new thing, and this is iOS 8, is to ask you every once in a while. Now, you know, Google Plus has been following your location all the time. Is that okay? Yeah, I said it was okay when I set it up. Are you sure? So I'm getting pop-ups all the time on the phone saying, you know, Facebook's following your location all the time. Is that okay? Yes. A little too much, a little too involved. But understand, this is Apple's new thing, is we're the privacy experts. And, you know, we're going to protect you. Google won't. So we will, and that's what they're trying to sell. Let's see here. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. We're going to go to Alan in Los Angeles in just a bit. He wants to know about the Galaxy Note 4. Oh, just coming out now. I'm very excited about it. Alan, Los Angeles, you thinking of getting the Galaxy Note 4, Alan?
Yes. Hello, Leo.
Hi, Alan.
Long-time listener, long-time fan, actually.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, and so I'm looking at, actually, between the two. We're looking at the Galaxy Note 4 and, of course, the 6 Plus.
Yeah.
Now, both being potential a 64-bit system, and I'm looking for some more complex functions within the phone. And so I'm wondering, because the Note 4, I'm told, from what I've read, is that it's a 64-bit functioning system, except that they've stopped the 64-bit function.
Well, first of all, you need to have a 64-bit operating system for this to make any sense at all. And Android is not yet. It will be, but it is not yet. Second, I would point out that this is meaningless, that it doesn't mean anything. It's just a checkbox. Oh, it's 64-bit. It must be twice as good as 32-bit. No. Just doesn't mean anything. It means you can work with larger chunks of data because you have bigger data registers. And it means you can address more memory, more than 4 gigs of RAM. But you know what? This is getting ready for the day when a smartphone has 4 gigs of RAM, but nobody does yet. And frankly, you don't need 4 gigs of RAM in a cell phone. The biggest phones have 3 gigs. The Note has 3 gigs. I think that's more than adequate. So 64-bit is more a selling point, and the only reason Samsung's doing it is because Apple did it last year.
Yeah.
And the only reason Apple did it is because it sounds good. You know, I defy anybody to tell me why 64-bit's better. In some cases, 64-bit is worse because you're moving more data around. So don't worry about the 64-bit. Probably what you're seeing is the difference between the Exynos processor and the Snapdragon processor. In the U.S., Galaxy phones, Samsung phones, use a Qualcomm processor. In the rest of the world, the Galaxy phones use a Samsung Exynos processor. And my guess is the Exynos is 64-bit, but in the U.S., they'll be using the 501 or 801. I'm not sure what they're using. And that is I don't think, 64-bit yet. Let me check. Yeah, they're going to use the octa-core Exynos processor outside the U.S. So that's probably mostly what you're seeing is you saw the international sales announcement, you know, that the Samsung party announcement, and they, you know, they said we're going to be 64, but what they really meant was the Exynos will be 64. I'll have to say I've seen benchmarks Apple Insider, I think it was Apple Insider, benchmarks 6 Plus versus the Note 4. Note 4 doesn't fare well because it's moving so many more pixels. It's got a much higher resolution screen. And this is another example of having such a big resolution screen is a checkbox in the spec, you know, wars. We saw this happen in the PC market. It was a bad thing where if you had more checks, you know, in the PC Magazine review, they do a grid and they'd have more checks. This antivirus had more checks. People bought it. The problem is we got these bloated, giant programs, so they'd have all the checkboxes. You didn't need them. But it sold software. Now we're seeing the same thing, I think, with smartphone specs. So what? You don't need 64-bit. You don't need QHD. Go for the phone you want. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo is the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Our website, techguylabs.com. You'll find a link there to our chat room if you want to be one of the kids in the back of the room who are kibitzing and throwing spitballs. Go ahead. Be my guest. Techguylabs.com. Ed on the line, our next caller from Palmdale, California. Hi, Ed. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Oh, long-time listener, and I'm a fan.
Thank you.
A fan.
Thank you.
Okay, the problem is I lost my eyesight. I have a Motorola, old Motorola V50, I think it is right now, or V500, I forgot which number. I've replaced it twice.
Yeah.
Now I need to get something that I can put the numbers from here into the new Motorola or the Windows phone.
Usually if you go to the phone store to buy a phone,
voice to record the numbers, is that possible in any one of those two phones?
Using your voice to record. Usually when you buy a new phone, you bring in the old phone, they will transfer those numbers over for you at most phone stores. You want to re-enter them all via voice?
Correct.
Boy, that's a good question. I don't think, you know, for the blind listeners that I've talked to, almost universally say Apple is the best choice for accessibility. All of the phones will read you the screen. Google has this capability in Android. Apple certainly does. I'm pretty sure Windows Phone does as well. I don't know, though, if you can dictate. You can certainly, when you make a call, you can say, call 555-1212. And all of the assistants, Cortana, Siri, Google Voice, all of them will dial a number for you. But to edit the contact list with voice, I don't know. That's an interesting question. Wouldn't it be better just to have the phone store transfer the data over?
The last time I tried to do that, they said I had too much. Could only do what's on my SIM card.
Yeah, they can only transfer from the SIM card. Yeah, that's annoying. Let me ask the chat room if they have any experience dictating the contact list. You certainly can do that with Google Voice on Android by saying add new contact and then giving that. It's hard to do, though. It's hard to do. I'd find it difficult. I would say you didn't include the iPhone in that list. Are you not interested in an iPhone, Ed?
Well, I wasn't because I was trying to figure which of the three would be
iPhone is widely agreed to have the best, we call it accessibility, the ability to use it, whether you don't have any sight or you have other, you can't hear, whatever the issue is. And I know I have many blind listeners who swear by the iPhone. They're very happy. So that's a good choice. This voice dictation is new in Windows Phone. They're using something called Cortana. Supposedly, I haven't tried this, unfortunately, so I can't tell you. Supposedly, Cortana will let you edit entries with voice, which means you could probably create an entry and then add a phone number. It's going to be a long, painstaking process, but yeah, you could do that.
All right.
I think you could do it with all three of them. You'd have to say, you know, create new contact, you know, Siri, create a new contact and all that. So I think any of the three would be good. You probably, your best bet is to go to, you know, an Apple store, you know, the Verizon. Who's your carrier? AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile? Say again?
AT&T.
AT&T. So you go into an AT&T store. They should help you with that stuff.
All right.
Yeah. They're the ones who could be most helpful, I think. And I will continue to, you know, monitor the chat room, see if they've got an answer for you. You know, the Windows Phone website doesn't say editing contacts by voice. Certainly you can with Google, and I would be surprised if you couldn't with iPhone. I like the iPhone for accessibility. I think they've done the best job all along. One thing they didn't do a very good job with is this, and I almost don't want to say it out loud, Hey Siri function. If you've got your iPhone plugged in, if it's being charged, you don't have to press any buttons. You can just talk to it and go, Hey Siri, and it wakes up. The problem is that's a terrible choice for a wake-up phrase. On Moto X and Android phones, they usually have at least five syllables. Okay, Google now. I guess on Android devices, you can say, okay, Google. That's four. Hey, Siri, three is too few, and that means you have too many false positives. I know this because, Lisa, I had my iPhone plugged in to charge it overnight. Lisa was listening to an audiobook, and every few minutes, the iPhone would trigger. Siri would say, yeah, what? Just spontaneously. Nobody said, hey, Siri, but one of our listeners, F and Dunny's in our chat room, put up a video of President Obama triggering it by just mentioning the word Syria. I predict, and all the people in the chat room and everybody at home now, they're all saying I'm waking up their phone. I apologize. It's hard to talk about this without actually doing it. I predict Apple will allow you, as Motorola has done, to change that phrase, or will require a longer phrase. They've got to. Or maybe there's a setting they can tweak as to how accurate the match has to be. But right now, it's crazy. If it is on by default, if you plug in your iPhone, it will respond. I like it. I have it on my bedside table. And if in the middle of the night I want to know what time it is, I could say, hey, Siri, what time is it? And it'll tell me. I like that. You have to be connected to power for that to work. And, of course, you can disable it. And I would suggest that. Or do what Lisa did, which is bury it under a pile of towels and books. That's how I know she was having a problem, because I got up the next morning and said, what happened to my phone? It's buried. It was talking to me all night. Vance in Florida, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Vance.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I'm out here in Florida, and this is the first time I've called you since I think you were on LA Radio talking about upgrading an MSI.
Ah, that's a long time ago. Those were the good old days. By the way, somebody just tried to add contacts with Siri on the iPhone, and you cannot dictate contacts on the iPhone, of all things. You cannot add or edit contacts. So maybe the iPhone isn't a good choice on that one. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Vance.
Okay. I'm not an Apple guy. I'm a Windows guy. And I have two computers, and one I use for, you know, doing work on the internet and writing. And then the second one I use for processing and uploading YouTube videos. And okay. Those videos are of meetings that could be 2 hours long, so
wow.
It takes a lot of time. And the problem is that the upload computer, and both are Windows 7, hogs the entire bandwidth on the cable port.
Yeah, and so let me explain why that happens. Uploads, if you're doing uploading, you're not going to be able to do any downloading, because all downloading requires a little bit of uploading, an acknowledgement from your computer. Yeah, I got that packet. Go to the next one. So if you saturate the upstream, uploading videos, your connectivity across the house is going to disappear because there's no way to acknowledge received packets.
Yeah, I can't even watch a Netflix movie or anything.
No. No, because all of that is download. You would think, well, I got two channels. I got an upload and a download. But the problem is download uses the upload, too. So if you've saturated the upload, and that's easy to do because upload is usually a lot slower than download.
How can I allocate or split the bandwidth so that they're online video or Netflix or anything else isn't interrupted entirely by the upload screen?
Yeah, this is why some programs like BitTorrent, for instance, will let you say, you know, you can only use this much upload bandwidth. You're probably using your browser to upload to YouTube, and that doesn't have that capability. You'd have to run additional external hardware. I don't know of a way to do that unless your router supports it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK Leo. 888-827-5536. Stephanie, Los Angeles. Hello, Stephanie. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm okay, considering.
Only okay? What's the matter?
Yeah, I should have never bought. I should have bought the Mac, and I didn't. But anyway, I bought a Samsung Windows 7 notebook. And it's sort of been a disaster.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay.
What's the disaster? What's been going on?
Well, finding a teacher has been very difficult. Yeah. I spent a year trying that.
Oh, dear. And you know, that is one thing Apple has figured out. They do very well. It's called one-to-one, and they'll do it at the Apple store for you. And they've really, I think, done a good job of helping people use Macintosh computers. I would hope that Microsoft would start doing that now that they have retail outlets.
Yeah, because, see, what happens is your Microsoft neighbors say, oh, no, go buy the Windows. I'll help you. But the new Windows isn't the Windows they're used to.
Right.
So, you know, that's really the problem. There's a misconception that you can just help. The person who wants to help you really just wants to help you on the system they have.
Right.
Okay. All right, but anyway.
Well, and there's also a lot of people who think they understand what's going on and don't.
Okay, I have a problem.
Yes.
I was on the phone with my Mac friend, and I said, you know, I need some help with this. And he gave me a number. Well, it turns out that number was some people who took over the entire computer.
Yeah. Well, that can be okay.
It was all the numbers. It was just like
that can be okay if, but the problem is, it can also be bad if it's somebody who has malicious intent. As soon as they have access to your computer, it's like they're sitting there.
It was completely malicious.
Oh, where'd you get this number from? Just friends?
Yeah, I don't know.
Some friend.
I have it somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, there are, like, if you have a Dell and you call Dell Tech Support and you know you called Dell Tech Support, you know, from a number that's like listed. They sometimes will manipulate your computer. That's okay. They know what they're doing. On the other hand, there's people, and this maybe is where your friend got the number, who will call, cold call you and say, hey, I'm calling from Microsoft Support, and I see you as a problem. I'd like to help you. Don't let them in your computer.
Well, they got in completely. So there's nothing on there that I'm afraid of them getting or that I need to keep. So I'm wondering, is there any way to wipe everything off and start anew?
Yeah, did you get some disks with your computer, or did you make those disks when you first started using the computer?
I have a disk.
Good.
I don't know if it's the right disk, but I did get
It'll usually be called a system recovery disk.
Uh-huh.
If you do, get the data off that you need. If you've, you know, got an address book on there, or, you know, you've got, you know, your novel is on there. If there's anything you need, get it off first, back it up, because you're going to wipe the drive. Do you have anything on that computer you need?
Not really.
All right. Because you'll be basically, if it's the right disk, a system recovery disk will wipe the hard drive and start over. It'll basically make that computer as it came from the factory, which is what you want.
Exactly.
And in fact, most tech support people, you know, if you call Dell, the first thing they're going to have you do is that, because they don't know what you put on there, and they want to make sure you're back to scratch.
Yeah, it's a Samsung.
Yeah, Samsung. So if you do have the original recovery disk, That's okay. Put that in there. Run it. It'll, you know, and then it'll start over with you. Windows 8 has this built in.
Won't that be infected? That's what I don't understand.
No, because it's a CD. It can't be, or a DVD. It can't be infected.
Okay.
So you're starting from scratch. Make sure it wipes the drive. Now you're fresh. Do go out and run Microsoft Update immediately before you do anything else, because you want to get all the updates to Windows that have come out since you bought that computer. That's really important. And then you can use it as you've used the other one. Don't let anybody in your computer.
Isn't it updating automatically? I mean,
But not that disk. That disk is, you know, that's the whole point. That disk is a read-only disk. It can't be modified. That's why it's virus-free, but it's also update-free.
Okay, update the disk. I gotcha.
Okay. Well, you can't. You update your computer, right?
All right. Now, the other thing I did about the time that I bought the computer, there was a show on in which you were talking about partitioning something. I think it was a hard drive.
Yeah, let's not get too fancy here.
I did it already.
Oh, wow.
I did.
How did that work for you?
I don't even know what it did. I mean, I have tracked myself everything.
Actually, this would be a case where you might be glad you did. So
the only thing the computer helped me do is spend money. It's really
It's good at that, isn't it? Yeah. So the reason this is actually the reason I tell people to do this. It's kind of an advance. I should really have like black diamond tips and say only if you're expert. But you figured it out, which is great. And then you put your data on the second partition. So you have a C drive that's Windows and your programs. And then your documents are all on the D drive. This does require some manipulation and setup. But once it's working that way, the reason you do this is now, if you had done that, when you run the recovery disk, you only wipe off the C drive. You don't have to worry about your data. It's on a separate drive. But I bet you didn't go that far. I bet you just partitioned it.
I don't know.
You don't even know what you did.
No. Well, I did. I do know that something got in. A partition was made. And I don't
Well, you got to do more than just make it. I mean, that's the.
Some directions.
My directions?
But, yeah. But how is this going? No, but they were, you know, not that detailed.
No, apparently not. I'm so sorry.
Let me ask you something.
Yes.
When I wiped the drive, is it going to matter what I did regarding that partitioning?
No. In fact, it'll probably be a good idea to eliminate that partition.
Should I eliminate it first before I wipe the drive?
Usually you do have to do that as a separate step there. Okay. Yeah, but I wouldn't worry about it. The most important thing is to get Windows, just to reformat and get Windows fixed up there.
Okay.
Yeah. And don't listen to that Leo guy when he gives the black diamond tips, because you can... It's like a ski slope. You go, well, I've just learned how to ski. What is this black diamond slope? Let me try that. You can get in over your head a little bit.
Yeah. Well, the main thing is to keep your balances high in your credit card so you don't have much room.
I'm so sorry. I wish there really needs to be. You can see the need for this. Because you don't want to be calling somebody on the radio, wait on hold for an hour so I could tell you this. You want somebody.
All right.
Well, I'm glad. But I feel like you and everybody else really needs a trustworthy tech support shop that you can go to. And this is what Apple really realized. And the one reason I think Apple's kind of starting to corner the home market is because of this. You can go there and they have the genius, however genius they might be. They're at least trained not to screw things up. And for the most part, they do a really good job and they have hand-holding and they have the one-to-one. And so that Apple understands there's this need. But that's part of the reason the Apples are so expensive is because all of that is built into the price of a computer.
Well, I don't understand why they don't have discs for beginners and then
I agree.
Just a series of discs that don't.
Well, there are, you know, there's that computer professor guy. I don't recommend those. That's another thing that's going to just ring up your charges. I don't know what the answer is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I feel so bad for people who buy a computer. I think one of the reasons the computer industry is suffering right now is because people have finally realized that for most of what you do with a computer, you don't need a computer. It's overly complex, Windows especially. It's complex. And, you know, of course, when I say that, I always hear from all the Windows enthusiasts who say, well, no, I love it. It's great. But that, yeah, that's for you. Not everybody should have a complex device like a personal computer, especially since there are excellent choices now. Tablets, Chromebooks, even smartphones that do all the functions most people want. Email, web surfing. They do almost everything people want to do. In most cases, everything people want to do. And they're so much simpler. We've learned a lot. The problem is that a lot of the computer industry, and certainly a lot of the computer talk shows, are run by old-timers who are stuck in the computer era, the personal computer era. And that's fine. And if you're a hobbyist, an enthusiast, you know, and you want to learn how to partition drives and install hardware and fix drivers, if you want to do that, that's great. But it's not, I think it's no longer mainstream. And I think most people, if you're listening right now and you're trying to make the decision about what to buy, it's not even Mac versus PC anymore. It really isn't. For most people, you should get a tablet or you should get a Chromebook, something that's simple, secure, will get the job done, won't get you in trouble. You know, if she'd called the same question, with a Chromebook, I'd say, oh, no problem. You go to the power wash setting. It's in your advanced settings. You power wash it. You press a button. You restart the computer. It's back to the way it was when it came home with all the updates automatically. And then since your data isn't really on the computer, but it's in the cloud, your data is still safe. It just seems like a good solution. If you want a computer, if you're an enthusiast, you understand it, and you're willing to, and most importantly, you're willing to spend time and money on it because it's your hobby, because you need to for your work. You know, you'll know. You know if you need it, if you're a gamer. If you don't know if you need it, don't get it. And that's the problem is people, the default is get a computer because that's what we said for the last 20 years. Not anymore. Ann is on the line from Napa. Hi, Ann. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, we've watched you for quite a while.
Thank you, Ann.
I've had a problem with the, my guess it's the Amazon Fire TV.
Yes.
We got it so we could watch you on our TV.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Rather than the iPad.
Yeah.
But it keeps freezing. Your program keeps freezing. The last time it froze at 13:07 by your clock to 13:14.
So 7 minutes gone.
Yeah.
That's worse than the Rosemary Woods moment.
Yeah.
Just disappeared. So do you have, partly this is an internet thing. You know, I think we who are internet broadcasters, and I include, obviously I do a radio show on regular radio stations, but many of our viewers watch on the internet. And then I do many more shows. I do dozens of other shows through the week that are internet only. You either download them and watch them, or and we're trying to make this work, you watch them as if you're watching TV.
Right, a live stream.
I love that. But remember, this is bleeding-edge technology. Even Apple couldn't get this right. I don't know if you tried to watch the Apple announcement of the new iPhones, but for the first 20 minutes, they had Chinese translation going on in the background because somebody pushed the wrong button. They kept buffering. They kept pausing. They'd go back to there would be freezes exactly as you described, and then it would jump and be 2 minutes later. And this is because the technology isn't the same as broadcast technology. It's much more complicated, and it's going over the public internet, which means it's unpredictable. Probably, if you're having that kind of freezing, you may not even have enough bandwidth. Who's your internet service provider there in Napa?
AT&T.
Yeah, so you're on a DSL connection.
Right.
Do you know what bandwidth they promised you?
I don't remember. Our son was... We put in a new router and a new modem because we thought we've had
Could that, be that
so long. So we put in a new one.
Could be that.
Yesterday, and it's...
Still doing it.
It was...
And what app are you using on the Fire TV? How are you doing that? On the browser or using an app?
No, it's an app. We got the little box, the Fire TV, you know, we sent from Amazon.
And are you using the Twit Pro app?
Yes.
Okay, that's a good app. I think it's just the bandwidth is inadequate and the internet is unpredictable. If everybody who was watching that stream had the same problem, then it'd be our fault.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because if we're doing something wrong, then it would affect everybody. But since It isn't, at least as far as I know, I don't think everybody had that same problem. It's likely that your internet connection isn't consistent, and this is very common, unfortunately. Yes. Are you on, is it connected wirelessly?
Yes. The Amazon, the wire TV is hooked up to the television.
Yeah, but it's not connected to the router. It's getting that Wi-Fi.
No.
Yeah, I mean, also could be somebody in your house is watching YouTube. You know, if other people are using that internet connection, that, believe me, I want you to have a perfect high def signal. If this were broadcast television, you would, but you're watching over the internet, and it's still early days. We don't have it perfected
yet. Well, it's just my husband and I, and he's the one that insists he watches your program, so that's the only thing that's on is you.
Well, tell your husband I love him.
Yeah.
The chat room is saying we have been having a little bit of stalling lately. If you're trying to watch high-def video over the internet, you need a pretty significant amount of bandwidth, and you need it pretty consistently.
Yeah. Well, he has Sonos. And so when you're constantly cutting out like that, we watch the picture and listen to it on Sonos.
And that works okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sonos does it via internet radio. Audio, if you think about it, a lot less bandwidth. Almost everybody with a high-speed internet should be able to listen to our audio stream, no problem.
Yeah.
And so I do encourage you to use Sonos or even your computer or tablet and listen to our, because we do provide an audio stream.
Oh,
and that's you know, a tenth of the amount of data, if even that.
Yeah. But see, he likes to watch you. He likes to see what you're doing.
Yeah, because I make faces and, yeah.
And he wants to watch Chris.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad to hear that. I don't know what the answer is.
Our son has suggested that we call AT&T and pay more and get higher.
It might be the solution. I don't want to be self-serving, but there's probably other stuff you want to watch on your Fire TV. It may be not really, just me, huh?
Yeah, we don't watch movies. We watch YouTube sometimes, but other than you, that's all we usually watch.
You might also, in that application, you can change your source. So you might try a lower. We offer several quality. You might try Bit Gravity Low, BG Low. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a lower quality picture, but it's not going to be as demanding.
Yeah.
See if that works. If that helps, then you know you're not getting sufficient bandwidth from your provider. And in that case, you could pay more and get faster speed.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in town or are you out of town?
We're in Napa. We're off of like Salvador Avenue, in that area there.
So DSL, which is what you have, is very distant dependent. So the distance that counts is the distance from you to the central office.
Yeah.
If you're in the town of Napa, you're not far from the central office.
Yeah.
But if you're out in the country, out there in the beautiful wine country, then you might be far enough that your DSL can't go very fast. But sounds like you're near enough.
Yeah.
Hey, you and your husband should come over. It's just a 45-minute drive. And,
I know.
I'd love to meet you.
Of course, he's 86.
That's okay. Drag him in here.
Yeah. he's been listening to you for quite a while, and he really enjoys watching you on the big TV.
We were
watching it on the iPad. But
no, it's better on a big screen.
Yes.
Yeah. What's his name?
Stan.
Hi, Stan. Hi, Stan and Ann.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. And yeah, all I can say is, it's internet. It's cutting edge. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Wow. We've whizzed through the day today. Are we almost done? Holy cow. Let's see here. Diego in Corona, California. Is that right, Diego?
Yeah.
Hey, Diego. Welcome.
Hi, I just want to say, Leo, that you're the best.
No, I'm not the best, but I am close, so thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm a huge fan. Well,
thank you, Diego.
You're welcome. I have a two-part question.
Lisa tells me I'm not the best, so my family keeps me in line. You are not the best. They tell me that. So go ahead.
Well, my first question is, I'm really big on League of Legends, and I do play a lot on Steam.
All right. So let me ask about League of Legends, because this is, and I on Twitch, if you go to twitch.tv, this is the game. Everybody's playing it. Tell me about League of Legends. It's you're looking down on it, kind of like it's a little bit like Diablo 3, something like that.
Yeah, it's something like that. I pretty much, it's just, you know, two teams, five people on each team.
Ah, so you're always raiding.
Right.
And you have a team. And are these other people usually buddies or just people you team up online?
Sometimes you can have your friends, but you can also be paired up with a random team and you communicate amongst yourselves.
So there's strategy, a lot of strategy in this.
Yes.
A lot of planning.
Yeah.
You know, somebody said that because I think a lot of parents look at games like this, and I'm not going to let my kid play that. And somebody said this is the best training for the future work world ever because you've got to get together in ad hoc teams, set a goal, make a plan, strategize, work together, cooperate. This is really valuable skills. So just mentioning. So good. So you play a lot of League of Legends. You play it on Steam. That means it's on your PC.
Yeah.
All right.
And pretty much I have a MacBook Pro. I mean, I bought it in 2013, and I really like it. And, you know, I'm just trying to get the best out of it. And my thing is I don't know how to stream, and it's more for a hobby, not really for...
So you would like to use Twitch.tv or something like that to stream, huh?
Right.
Yeah, boy, I mean, League of Legends is so popular. It's easily the number one game on Twitch right now.
Yeah, but like I said, you know, it's just more of a hobby. I'm not really trying to make
it. So are you playing League of Legends on the Mac?
Yes.
Okay. So what you want to do is continue to play. And you see all these people doing it on Twitch, and sometimes you could see them in a little box, but sometimes it looks like they're actually in the game. It's pretty impressive what people are doing. Most of those people, I think, are using PCs. Let me ask the chat room. You've got a camera built into the laptop, so let me ask the chat room, because I know there's ways to do this on Xbox, on PS4, on Windows. Anybody doing this on a Macintosh, and how are you doing it on a Macintosh? What is the software that you use? Because obviously you need something running in the background that is going to capture the camera and inset it on top of the video. I know Twitch has... their guides, don't they, online on how to do this. I haven't read their guide for the Mac. Have you looked at that?
Not too much. I have never streamed. I've only used, like, the stock QuickTime player just to record with the screen.
Right, you were just recording.
I don't know.
Somebody's telling me that the Open Broadcaster software is designed for streaming to Twitch, among other things. It's free, obsproject.com. It works on Windows, but also they're apparently working on a Linux version, and they have an OS X version, which is awesome. So this will allow you to encode the video as you're playing. This is the real challenge, of course, is that the game has to be, you know, you want the game to be fluid and fast. And at the same time, here you are, you're going to be recording, you're going to be capturing, you're going to be saving or streaming it out. Your computer's doing a lot of other stuff. I don't know if the Mac Pro you have is fast enough or not, but certainly the good news is this: because this is free, you can at least try it and see if it works for you. obsproject.com. It's designed to work with Twitch. So thank you, chat room, for that suggestion. And but you know, this is a hot topic right now. Twitch, Amazon just bought Twitch, TWITCH.TV, for, well over $1 billion. And all, if you go to Twitch.TV, all you'll see is people playing video games. It's kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like ESPN, except there's thousands of channels, all of them somebody playing a video game, commentating on it. Some of the people who watch it to learn, if you're watching League of Legends, and I imagine one of the reasons League of Legends is so popular is because it's a fairly deep strategy game. So you watch to learn, but you also might just watch for amusement. So that's a very interesting new category. It's got to be driving NBC, CBS, ABC crazy. Because here's some guy in his bedroom with off-the-shelf hardware, for free, broadcasting to tens of thousands of people, doing a show. They cannot figure it out. I know these executives just scratching their heads. I don't get it. Where did we go wrong? And they're just hoping that their model will continue until they can retire and then let somebody else solve the problem. Which is basically how the record industry dealt with Napster, how the movie industry is dealing with BitTorrent. Just not on my watch. Let me just get to retirement. Then you guys can figure out how to solve this problem. Rita, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I think you're the last call of the day. Hi, Rita.
I've been a listener for about a year. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm a self-employed court reporter.
Okay.
The programs that I have require a PC.
Yes.
And I'm looking for some kind of online tech support solution. Like, I've seen Geek Squad out there.
You know, if you get a good computer, I'll tell you, for instance, Dell, you have to pay extra. But Dell Gold support for a Dell computer is as good as it gets. I'm not a fan of these third-party support because they don't know your computer as intimately. What kind of computers do you use?
I have an HP.
I think HP has you got to get the paid support. See, what's happened in the PC world, you noticed how the prices have tumbled. Well, one way they get these really low prices is by unbundling support. So the free support you get is terrible, as you've experienced probably.
Yeah, I have AVG, and somehow I got hooked up with tech support with AVG that at first I thought was just virus-related issues, but then come to find they sold their support contracts or whatever, and they cover not just virus issues, but
yeah.
Any troubleshooting.
Yeah, there are a lot of third-party companies. I don't know of a great one, to be honest with you, and unfortunately, we're out of time. Maybe we could find out, put it on the website. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, do you think?
Hold on. I can take your call in a sec, but we have to wait for the magic sound. Okay, sorry about that, Kathy. Go ahead.
It's Rita.
Rita, yeah.
Crucial for any business. Do you think that now my HP is several years old, it's over 2 years old.
Maybe it's time to go to Dell and use the Dell, because the Dell Gold support is good.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried HP's paid support?
No, I haven't.
Usually the paid support is decent, because you're paying for it. But it's not cheap. What kind of problems are you having?
Well, funny things that little error messages pop up at the startup, after the boot up, like it's looking for a device. So a little pop-up comes up, and then there's some other little pop-up comes up, which I thought was a virus when I first got this or something, you know, malicious.
Right.
So this Tech Buddy outfit was helping me with that, and they got rid of it. They take control of your computer, and they go through and clean things up.
Good.
And it went away. But as I thought about it, I thought, well, is there some solution out there that if I have a problem, I can call somebody and they can remotely help me instead of taking my computer to the repair shop?
Right. And there certainly are. There are. And I don't know which ones are good and which ones are not.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have an advertiser that did this, and I don't know if they're still around. I'm not sure what the story is with them, to be honest with you. But Tech Buddy, the Geek Squad, there are lots of people who will do this. I think you should call HP and see if they have a paid support service. In almost every case, that's exactly what they'll do. They don't come to your house. If there's a hardware error problem, of course they will, or you'll bring it in. But for most of these things, like little pop-ups like that, they can do over the phone support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. It didn't occur to me to call HP.
Yeah, I would start with the company because they know your hardware. They know exactly what's running on it. They can help you. Sometimes these pop-ups, particularly on HP, are actually HP software they've put on there that is update software and stuff like that. And they would know that. I think HP... Not the free support. That's going to be junk. It's for all of these guys. But the gold or whatever HP calls it, I would try it.
Yeah. And it seems like the Tech Buddy is about $240 for a couple of years.
That's a very low price.
Yeah.
And the cost of these calls is usually $50 or $60 per call.
Yeah, that's what I did a little research and I saw that.
Yeah. So anybody who charges you less than that may be cutting corners at some point.
Yeah.
Like they'll have a call center in Asia.
Right.
I would go with HP. And it's not going to be cheap, but this is your business.
Mm-hmm.
And you need this thing to be reliable and you know, safe and secure. And I imagine, I don't know, but in your business, there may even be regulations regarding privacy. I don't know, but...
If there are, I don't.
Okay. Well, you would know. I don't.
You know.
You probably don't keep the transcripts on the computer anyway, right?
Well, I do. Oh. And
well, I think those are probably important to keep protected. Not so much a public court, but any depositions that you take, you can't let those be.
You know, and just as an FYI, the reporters that I work with, nobody uses... like the Citrix product that advertises with you,
right?
Where you have a link, we just send the transcripts as an attachment. It just goes.
Yeah,
that's what we all do.
Well, because there probably aren't any regulations, there ought to be. But don't ask for them.
Right, no,
it just adds. But that's just sending them in public. You might as well put them out in public.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, I have to run, but I thank you, Rita.
Hey, thanks,
yeah, try HP. I think that'll be a good choice.
Will do.
All righty. Take care. Boy, again, you see the need for some help here. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.